Would you please find in God's Word the 6th chapter of Hebrews? Have you ever felt like asking the question, is what I am doing meaning anything? Does it count for anything? Does anyone recognize? Does anyone know what I'm doing? Does anyone appreciate what I'm doing? I imagine that at some point in time, every Christian has those thoughts and those questions in their mind. I suspect that it's something that oftentimes enters the minds of those who teach Bible classes, particularly those who teach the Bible classes for the little ones. Does anybody really appreciate it? Is there any recognition for what I'm doing? And let me say to you, those of you that do teach those classes here at this place, that you do a great and a substantial work. You offer instruction about God to young ones who in some instances may be getting the only such instruction. That ought not to be. There ought to be reinforcement, additional teaching in the home and by the parents. But the fact of the matter is that sometimes that just doesn't happen. And the only place that those young ones will learn about God and learn as they grow a little bit older about the things that God expects of them is in those classes. It may very well be that little recognition is given to that work. But whether the recognition comes or not, the realization of what is being achieved by your efforts should be enough. But that doesn't change the fact that for some, there is what one person called a suffocating sameness about life and about, more particularly, about service that is rendered by those who are serving the Lord. That sometimes it can, just by virtue of the sameness, the repetitiveness, can become a suffocating experience. And so the person who is overwhelmed by this is overwhelmed by a deep sense of being unappreciated for what they are doing. Wouldn't it be far better if we could replace that suffocating sameness, that sense of a suffocating sameness, with a sense of a recognized regularity? That there is certainly the need for a regularity about our service to the Lord, and that we could be so much better if we could recognize that it is a service that is recognized, if by no one else, by the Lord. Sometimes people feel this way because they really haven't given thought to the fact that God does recognize what we're doing, that He does see. And this is a thought that is brought out in the 6th chapter of Hebrews and the 10th verse. It's a good verse, and I hope that you'll write it down or that you'll put it in your memory, because it's a verse you're going to need. If you don't need it now, if you haven't needed it in the past, you're going to need it at some point in time. Now, to put this in the context, remember that the Hebrew letter is being written to a group of Christians of Jewish descent who have come to realize and to believe that Jesus Christ is indeed just that. He is Jesus the Christ. He is the Messiah. They've come to believe that. They have become Christians, and They have become such at great cost to themselves. They have deviated, in a sense, from their past faith. They have departed from their father's faith. And that has come at great cost to them. But now, this letter is being written to such people who are tragically experiencing questions and doubts, and some have already turned away from Christ. And the writer is writing this letter so that he can persuade others that to make that decision would be a tragic mistake, and that they would be giving up what is far better if they turned away from their faith in Christ and returned to the faith of their fathers. And in fact, in verse 9 of Hebrews chapter 6, he says, "Beloved, we are convinced of better things concerning you and things that accompany salvation, though we are speaking in this way." He had just previously had some difficult things to say, things that would have been hard or challenging for them to hear. But he says, "I'm convinced of better things from you." And that's a theme that you'll find throughout this Hebrew letter. That, in fact, the word "better" appears 13 times in this letter that is composed of 13 chapters. And the sense of the whole letter is what you have in Christ is better. And it is really the completion of that Old Testament faith that your fathers had held to. And to turn from it now would just be a terrible mistake to make. But having said that, he comes then to the 10th verse, which will be the focus of our study this evening, where he says, "For God is not unjust so as to forget your work and the love which you have shown toward his name in having ministered and in still ministering to the saints." Do you see what he says in this 10th verse? He says, I'm wanting to assure you that you are serving a God who does not forget. He does not forget what you have done. He does not forget what you are doing. He will not forget what you will do. He is a God who recognizes. And so we need not become overcome with that suffocating sameness, that fear that, well, I'm just going through these repetitive acts and accomplishing nothing and no one really appreciates. It is recognized. It is acknowledged. If by no one else, by the only one that really matters. I want you to look at this 10th verse with me. And let's talk about some things that it has to say regarding the God who does not forget. Because He does not forget what you do, be it what you do as a Bible class teacher, or what you do in other aspects of the work of this congregation, or what you do as an individual Christian as you have opportunities in your day-to-day life to do the things that God would have you to do. He notices and He does not forget. And the first thing that the writer says in this verse is that God is not unjust. Now that's good news, isn't it? That God is not an unjust God. How unfair, how unjust would it be if God did not take note of the things that were done for Him? How unjust would He be if He noticed but He just didn't care? Well, it really just doesn't matter to me what those folks in Tustin are doing. How unjust would God be if that were the kind of God that He is? And sadly, of course, that is what many people think about God. Many people do think that God is unjust. Many people think that God is unfair. But the Scriptures say God is not unjust. Now I want you to take notice of a second thing that this verse says, and it has something to say about what God takes note of. Look at it again. God is not unjust so as to forget your work the love which you've shown in having ministered and in still ministering to the saints. There's a word that we use, at least where I come from, we use it. And I think we use it out here too. But it's not a word that's in the dictionary. It's eusta. Y-U-S-T-A, eusta. Now sometimes people will say, I used to pray. Well, they might say, I used to sing. I used to go to church. I used to believe. I used to preach. I used to do this, or I used to do that. You recognize the word now, don't you? Well, what this verse is saying about these people and about the God who does not forget is that these people, to their credit, were not a people of whom it could be said, oh yeah, we used to minister. Now, don't let the term minister here, or ministering and ministered, throw you. He's not talking about preaching. He's not saying that ministered and are ministering in the sense of you preached and you are preaching. This word means serve. And he's saying that they had served and they were serving the saints. They were helping. They were doing what they could to assist, to provide what was needed for the saints. Now, to their credit, what is said in this verse is not you used to serve, but rather you did serve and you are serving. And the God who does not forget is the God who understands and recognizes what you used to do, what you are doing. You may think, well, I've taught that class, or I've done this, or I've done that for 20 or 30 years. And don't think that God didn't know that. But don't think, too, that means, well, I don't need to do it anymore. Now, I want to say this to, there are young people here, and we appreciate young folks and appreciate what they do. And it's thrilling to see young people who, in the vim and vigor of youth, serve the Lord in the strength of their youth. But I want to tell you what's impressive. It's impressive to see a 70 or 80-year-old still doing what they've done for decades, serving the Lord. It's impressive to see those who are dealing with the ailments and difficulties of advanced age and life, with maybe illness added to those things, and yet continue in their faithful service to the Lord, doing what they can. They may not any longer be able to do all that they did at one time, but nonetheless, they're still doing what they can. That is impressive. And the God who does not forget is the God who does not forget what you have done throughout your life. It's awful easy for folks to come to a point and through whatever kind of reasonings and mental gymnastics we may go through to convince themselves, well, it's just time for me to quit. May I say this to you? It is never time to quit, to just give up. Now, I know there are some things that we cannot do that we maybe have been able to do in the past, but there it is never, it is always too early for one to quit. I like a saying I came across here not too long ago. It says, a faith that fizzles at the finish is often faulty at the first. But you get a faith that is firm and that is strong and that grows as life progresses. And when one comes to the finish, one comes to the finish like Paul did when he talked about having fought the good fight, having finished the course, and having the confidence that henceforth, that is, in the future, there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give, not only to me, but to all who love His appearing. These were folks who ministered, but they didn't quit. They continued to minister. And they did it, I'm persuaded, because they recognized what the writer of the letter was saying to them here. They did it because they understood, we serve a God who does not forget. But understand this, when we talk about the ministering that they did, we're talking about that which was work. It says that God is not unjust so as to forget your work. Now, if you think that ministering to the saints doesn't require effort, it's because you've never done it. But if you've done it, you know it requires some effort. It requires maybe sacrifice on the part of the one who is doing the ministering. It may require the sacrifice of money. It may require the sacrifice of time. It may require the sacrifice of effort. But it is going to be work. It is going to be an effort to do this. Why would people do this? Why would people, and what we like to refer to so many times as our busy and harried and hurried modern life, why would people incorporate into that this added concern of ministering to others? Well, it's because they understand they serve a God who does not forget. And in the end, before I finish that, let me say this. Another thing I heard here lately was, you know, the English are masters at the understatement. And if an Englishman is describing the flood, he would say, well, it was rather damp, you know. But here's the greatest understatement of it all, of them all. That in the end, it will all be worth it. In the end, it will all be worth it. Why does a person minister in the way that this passage refers to? It is because they understand they serve a God who does not forget, and in the end, it'll be all be worth whatever the effort was, whatever the sacrifice was, whatever the inconvenience experienced, it will all be worth it. But understand it. Doing this does require effort, and it will be work. But I want you to notice another thing that the writer says about this which was done, and that was that it was done from the right motive. He says that God is not unjust so as to forget your work and the love which you have shown toward His name. Why did they do this? They did it, and don't miss this, they did it because they loved God. If you love God tonight, what will you do? What will you do? I'll tell you who had a great lesson taught to him about this. It was the Apostle Peter. We won't take the time to look at the text, but it's in John, the 21st chapter. You remember after Jesus was crucified and He was raised from the dead, you remember how Peter had denied Him three times. And now Jesus is raised and the disciples are being called back to Him. And the first encounter that He has with Peter, Jesus asks him three questions. You remember them? It was, Peter, do you love me? Peter uses a different word for love. And he says, oh, Lord, you know I love you. And kind of the gist of it is, you know I like you a lot. Peter, do you love me? Oh, Lord, you know that I really do like you. Use the same word again. Peter, do you love me? And Peter objects to the questioning again. I suspect he probably felt the pain of being asked this question three times, like he had denied the Lord three times. But finally, what does Jesus say to him? He said, "Feed my sheep and tend my sheep." Two different words. Feed my sheep. That is, you give them that instruction that they require. And then tend my sheep. That is, you take care of them. That word tend is a word that comes from the poimeno, the same word that we come across in the book of Acts that has the word pastor involved in it. It's shepherd, my sheep. You provide for them. He's talking about ministering, doing for them. Now, why does Jesus do this? Why does he say this to Peter? It is because we, like Peter, need to understand that if we love God, we're going to demonstrate that in the way that we deal with people. May I ask you this question? What if Jesus spoke to you tonight? What if he appeared to you like he did to Peter? What if he talked with you and he said, he called your name and he said, "Now, there's a class here at this congregation of little children that need to be taught about me. They need to learn about me. And I just thought that maybe you might teach them about me for me. Would you do that?" I know what you'd do. You'd say, "Lord, I'm on my way home right now, and I'll be getting up a Bible lesson for them." What if he asked you, "There's one of my children, one of my sheep, who's sick, who needs a word of encouragement. And I was just wondering if I knew that someone needed to go by and speak to this person. And I thought of you. And I knew I could ask you to do it. Would you do it?" I think I know what your answer would be. I think you'd tell him, "Lord, I'm in my car and I'm going right there, right now." Now, I'll tell you what we need to do. We need to come to realize that is exactly what he has done. No, we haven't heard his voice audibly like Peter did in that sense of him speaking directly to him in his physical presence. But he has just, in just as real a way, spoken to us in his word and has called upon us to serve him because we love him, and that he has told us the way in which to do this. It is by demonstrating our love for him in the way that we deal with others. That's what these people had done. To their everlasting credit, they had ministered and they were still ministering because they loved God. But now, the final thing I want you to think about is this, that God is watching and that God does not forget. He makes that very clear in this passage when he says that God is not unjust so as to forget your work. That sentence just does not make sense if this is not true, that God is watching and that God does not forget. God will not forget, so he must know. If he knows, he has seen. Now, when was the last time that you were captivated by this thought that God watches and knows? If I'm praying, he knows that. If I'm not praying, he knows that. Doesn't matter what your wife knows or doesn't know about, or your husband knows or doesn't know about that. God knows. If I'm reading His Bible or if I'm not reading it, He knows. If I'm treating the neighbor right or if I'm not treating the neighbor right, He knows that. Now, let me ask you this. Are you glad that He knows? You know, to a lot of folks, that is a daunting and a fearful thought. And they never get beyond that, that God knows all that I do. But really, that's the difference between those who are living right with God and those who are not. What brings grief to one, the idea that God knows, is the source of joy to the other. And it is the springboard for continued service to the other, because they know that God knows and that God does not forget. Mark Twain once said this, "If you feed a dog, it will never forget it. But if you feed a man, he might forget. Because men forget. But God does not forget." And in fact, the closing thought in this Hebrew letter, or rather in this section of the Hebrew letter, is in verses 11 and 12. Of the sixth chapter, where he says to them, "And we desire that each one of you show the same diligence so as to realize the full assurance of hope until the end, so that you will not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promise." Do you see what he wants from them? He says, we want the same diligence. We want the imitation of those who in times past have served God in faith. We want that replication in your life because you, like they, appreciate the fact that our God is a God who does not forget. You know, if you're not presently a child of God, this can be a message of great consternation to you, or it can be a lesson of great hope. I hope it's the latter. Because I hope that you would want to, in your life, serve a God who has such great appreciation for what His children do, that He takes notice of it, and He never lets it escape His attention or His memory. Not in the not the smallest detail. There are a lot of things that my children have done in the past that I'm proud of. And if you had the time, I could probably work up a list. But I know this. There'd be a lot of things on that list that are missing, or rather a lot of things missing from that list. There'd be a lot of things that I couldn't tell you about because I've forgotten them. Maybe some things that I ought to be the proudest of that I have forgotten what they did. But God does not forget the smallest detail, the seemingly most unimportant aspect of what you do for Him because you love Him. Do you love Him enough to give your will over to Him? To say to Him, "I want to be your child and I'm willing to do whatever you say." Would you do that tonight? God, through His Son, Jesus, has taught men and women who would believe that Jesus is the Christ, that if they would turn from their sins confess Him and be baptized, they would be forgiven of all their wrongs and they'd be made one of His children. And they could in love serve Him. And He won't forget it. Won't you come to Him while we stand and sing?